Welcome to the Yak Sports Podcast with Joe Deck and Leland McRae.
Joe, you know, most of the time we kick off these podcasts and I say, well, we haven't talked since last week or we talked minimally. We spent
CONCACAF Nations League. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no early soccer in this talk. But yeah, we spent a lot of time together in the last 3 or 4 days.
We did.
So hopefully we use enough nouns so our listeners know what we're talking about. But let's kick this show off by bringing in one of the best nouns we can, in Mike Parber from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, one of our go-to guests. And in this time of year is highly sought after, as we've been trying to play schedule tag the last couple of weeks to get you on. But we're happy to have you this week after you've flown around the USA a little bit here, following UVA and then jumping on the Longwood train and writing a lot of good articles. But let's start with talking UVA, because I know our local fans, plenty of them, were watching that trip for the Cavaliers out to Dayton and then, you know, turn around and come right back home and not go on to their next location. What was your read on that team with the early exit, their earliest exit, which was hard to beat, but their earliest exit out of this tournament that they've ever had?
Yeah, we kind of joked, hey, at least they didn't lose in the first round. They found a way to avoid that. But no, it's alarming that this program hasn't won a game since winning the national title in 2019. Yeah. And, you know, I'm one of those people that I'm a big Tony Bennett fan. And I looked at, you know, each of those losses. I said, well, there's a reason for this and there's a reason for that. And here's the thing. You can't keep stacking reasons, right? Yeah. At some point, you have to turn it around. And I'm not saying he won't, and I'm certainly not saying he's on the hot seat or anything like that. But even for a guy like me who looks at it and says, okay, here's what happened, right? They lost to Ohio after COVID shut them down. They couldn't practice. Or they lost to UMBC when, you know, Hunter was hurt. All of these things, it's fine to look at them. But you got to look at the big picture. And the big picture is this program isn't advancing in the tournament. That's a problem. You look at this year's team, they were not good offensively. And I know people say, oh, Virginia's never good offensively. That's not true. Virginia is always low scoring. They're always low possession. In their really good years, the Malcolm Brogdon years, 16, the national title year, 19, they were very efficient offensively. When they had the ball, they scored. Now, did they grind down the possession and score at the end of the shot clock? Sure. Did they grind you down at the other end and you were taking a shot with 1 or 2 seconds left? So yeah, the scores were in the 50s and 60s. I get it, but they were efficient. This year's team stunk offensively. They weren't efficient. They weren't good. They fluctuated in terms of what they thought they wanted to be. They had that stretch early on where they were raining three-pointers and it was like, okay, wow, McNeely and Groves, and that's what you're going to be. And then other teams looked at them and said, okay, McNeely, great. Groves, great. You know, those guys can knock down threes if you leave them open. They've got one or two, sometimes three guys on the floor who can't shoot the basketball. So teams started leaving Ryan Dunn. They started leaving Andrew Rohde. And all of a sudden, you were able to run McNeely off the line. Now he couldn't get threes. You're able to pack it in and not let Beekman penetrate. So I think they were very flawed. I think we may have talked about this in the preseason, but Jordan Minor was supposed to be the key there, right? He was supposed to be a center. The guy couldn't catch a basketball. Okay, he ended up getting pretty good defensively, hard, you know, effort guy, brought some physicality, did some nice things. But this team was conceptualized around the fact that they could throw the ball into him at the low block. Not that he's going to get 20 and 15 every game, but that he could catch a pocket pass and do something with it. So I think the slowness of his development and the lack of an offensive game really hurt them. Blake Buchanan, they anticipated, you know, he has to put on weight. He got bullied around. He said that to me the other day. I got a story coming out tomorrow, but his quote is, I got bullied around. You can't have that if that's where you're going for points. So I think this was a flawed team, and I thought they saved arguably their worst performance for last. I mean, that was 67-42 and not that close, not competitive at any point. It felt like the first 4 minutes, both teams came out, kind of stunk on offense, and then Colorado State was like, this is Virginia. This is what we've got to beat. Yeah. And it woke them up and they played pretty darn well. And Virginia just never did.
It reminded me of the game in Castle a few weeks earlier.
Yeah, just not competitive really from the opening minutes. And it, you know, it's discouraging if you're a Virginia fan, because I think a lot of people thought they would win that game and lose to Texas. There are a lot of people were having the debate of, okay, how do we view it if they win, but it's a first four game and then they lose in the first round? Like, is that a step forward? Well, guess what? You can put that debate on the shelf because they never got that far. So again, it was a flawed team. I thought they found a way to get rolling. They won those eight in a row. Then people figured them out again, and they didn't have enough offensive punch to get through. And they weren't great defensively, which is weird because they had Beekman and Dunn, who are NBA caliber defenders. I think the bad offense finally took its toll on the defense. I think it almost, and this is sacrilege to say about Virginia, I know, but it's almost like they got tired of playing defense because they knew it was pointless because they couldn't score.
Mike, I'll ask you, Leland and I aren't as plugged in as a lot of UVA fans are, I'm sure, but I don't remember seeing a ton of players entering the portal and leaving the system. Like, what do you think the reason is that Tony Bennett hasn't been able to build a team back up for tournament success since that national championship?
Yeah, it's been interesting. There have been a few things. And again, you don't want to get in this port where you're stacking reasons because now it's been, what, 5 years?
Right.
But yeah, it's a good question. And to me, a lot of it starts with Trey Murphy. The year they brought in Trey Murphy was expected to have to sit out. They did not expect to get that waiver. And they built a lot of their future roster planning around, okay, Murphy's out this year. He's in the next year. Obviously, it was a good thing for them that he got to play. It was good for the kid. But it did throw off their roster planning a little bit. And then you look at some other things. Isaac Trout, right? He redshirts. Two kids redshirt, Leon Bond and Isaac Trout. Leon Bond is committed, stays, plays this year, wasn't great this year. I thought that was a disappointment. But and then Isaac Trout leaves, and it's not everybody will say, oh, see you, Tony Bennett, you can't redshirt. Isaac Trout left because he wanted to be with his girlfriend. That's just part of the college makeup. But does it mess up your roster planning? And you're Tony Bennett, and you're a guy who wants to develop guys for 2, 3, 4 years. You can't have them transferring. You can't have them leaving. You can't miss on the transfers that are supposed to fill the holes. And you know, I think with Minor, you know, the verdict's out on Rhodey. The coaching staff really likes Andrew Rhodey. They think he does a lot of good things. The fans are like, the dude shoots 26%. You can't have it. Virginia believes he'll be a better shooter. I talked to Ryan Dunn's dad. I did a big story on Ryan Dunn. And his dad's like, Ryan is an electric scorer. Like, he's a great shooter. If you told me that his defense would be NBA ready his sophomore year, I would have thought he'd be a lottery pick. But he just didn't put the shooting on film. So they're confident that that comes around. But if Ryan Dunn shot his way out of the NBA draft but can be a good offensive player next year, that's going to be a game changer for them. But I just think it's hard for Virginia, the way they develop players, everything they do, they can't afford a guy to leave. They can't afford to miss. And I think they have some guys that just, they haven't been good enough for a team that needed them to be good enough.
Yeah. Well,
how about, go ahead.
I was going to say, Leland and I have been doing this debate, it seems like the whole year. And it turns out we were right again. But after hearing about how terrible the ACC is, it's the worst conference to ever put on the sport of basketball for an entire season. It turns out that the four teams that made it into the first round are all still around. And the SEC, who I was told is the greatest gift to basketball, had a bunch of teams get blown out.
Yeah, the Big East and the ACC had the most gripes, I thought, with teams being left out, teams that I thought were tournament caliber. And look what they've done. The teams that both of those leagues got in have advanced. The Big 12, the SEC, the teams that kind of feasted in the non-conference, and let's not blame them for this. They jobbed the system, right? They went out and they feasted on crappy opponents, and they built their net up so that when they played each other, they were making each other look better. It was all, you know, smoke and mirrors. It was all house of cards. I don't blame them. If you can, right? It's like people used to kill the Yankees for spending so much before there was a salary cap. Well, if these are the rules, you play with them.
Right.
Now, the ACC went out and played real games, and so their nets were questionable. And then when they started beating each other, people said, well, you lost to a team that was 65 in the net. Okay, but I think anybody who watched basketball knew that was ridiculous. I was surprised that there weren't more, I don't say intelligent, that's hard. More people in the know didn't stand up and say exactly what we're saying, which is these are better teams. They yeah. played better opponents. Like, I don't yeah. care what the metrics tell you. And I do think that there was a lot of pressure on the ACC in this tournament because every coach that, when I brought this up, every coach I talked to, their argument was, okay, our net is what it is, and we've had this loss, or yeah, we lost to Boston College, or we got upset by Lou, whatever it was. But they said, look what this league does every year in the tournament. That should tell you our teams are better.
Yeah.
I agree. They're right. If you come out and lay an egg after that's your argument all year, you're done. You're buried. Right or wrong, you're buried. And look, in the tournament, anything can happen. But they had to come out and back it up. And then Virginia comes out and it stinks. And you're like, oh, man, what are we headed for? But the rest of the team is absolutely delivered. I don't think they're done. I hate the fact that the bracket shapes it up that you can't have four Duke teams in the final, right? You got to go through each other. But at the same time, hey, if you get to that point, and I think Clemson has a really good shot. I thought Arizona was the weakest of the twos. I'm intrigued. I think Clemson could get there. But you get to the point where you have two all ACC matchups there and maybe two ACC teams in the final four. Carolina, I think, is as good as anybody. Could be a national champion. The question is, look, it's not going to change the selection process, but what it should have done is exposed that the net is flawed, that the net isn't telling you who the better teams are. And that you can fix, right? That you can adjust. You can weight games more appropriately. You can not over emphasize the early part of the season. I hope that's what the ACC has done, that it's once again shown that its teams are better than your teams and that you need to fix the net so that it reflects something real.
And, you know, you talk about this, but it's proven right again this year, like it was the year before that, last year and the year before that. And I hear that, and I agree. My fear is that they're just going to do kind of what they do in football sometimes with these G5 teams. Whenever a G5 team gets in a big bowl game and wins, oh, okay, well, that team was good, and they proved us wrong. But anytime a G5 team gets in and loses, they're like, see, that's why they don't belong with us. And it's just like they almost do this in the hope that the year the ACC can't win the tournament games, that they can sit there and go, see, the ACC isn't good anymore.
It's an all-in proposition every time. You're putting your reputation on
it. I'll ask you, Leland and I have floated this, and it gets harder to ignore each year that it happens. It's hard to ignore that a lot of this noise is from ESPN, who I know has a deal with the ACC, but their bigger deal is with the SEC, and it's secret that the SEC is looking at the ACC teams.
No, you are. It's 100% where this comes from. It is all ESPN, and I mean, I'll tell you this. This is a little inside behind the scenes, but I think it makes the point. Jordan Cornette was a phenomenal announcer for the ACC network, and he was one of the best surrogates for the league, a guy who went out and advocated, and when he spoke, it was intelligent and it was spot on and people listened, and they fired him. And that 100% came from ESPN, and the ACC loved him, wanted him there. We're not happy with that decision. It is a bad partnership. It is an abusive relationship is the best way to say it. Anything that's getting too good for the ACC gets cut down. They have no choice. They need ESPN. They need that partnership. But to call it a partnership, it's more like the old alliances. It means nothing, and you're going to get stabbed in the back. If you're the ACC, quite frankly, in my opinion, you're getting stabbed in the front. Like, it's out there for everyone to see. And I know I gave you a small example, but that's an example of the ACC is not being treated equally to the SEC.
My joke all weekend with the SEC, especially earlier when the SEC was over in the tournament, I know they cleaned up a couple games there, but was like, hey, on Monday when the SEC is a failure, you know what ESPN's going to talk about? The Dallas Cowboys. Like, they're not going to talk about the SEC being a failure. Like, and they're not going to talk about the ACC doing good. They just, like, they're going to go back to their bread and butter. But yeah, it's just, it's ridiculous, the whole narrative going into the tournament, the seeding. You know what, I don't necessarily want to be seated up. Like, I like where we're at, where the ACC gets these teams and they can be successful. Like, I just want more respect being talked about them. How much of an argument can I make for Pitt or Wake? Like, I get it, but it shouldn't have been like we were scratching for every spot we could get down the stretch. And people were saying, not looking at them. I get that, but that shouldn't have been the narrative.
Right. And people were saying a month ago that this conference could get two teams. That's asinine. That's asinine. Yes. Like that's ridiculous. Like if you're in the top
Sun
four
Belt
or five,
should have probably had two bids, not the
right,
ACC.
Right. I mean, if you're in the top four or five of the ACC, you should be in. And then it's the next team, six and seven.
Well, tell that to some Hokie teams from.
Oh, yeah. And now, again, you know, if you go case by case, and because you think about some of the Seth teams, there was always a game where you said, okay, it's your own fault. But it doesn't mean they didn't deserve to be in. Yeah. It didn't mean they were good enough to get in. It didn't mean they weren't good enough to reach the Sweet 16 if they were in. The problem for the ACC was it almost felt like you didn't have to trip up down the stretch. You were already on the outside, and you were waiting for something to get you in. I mean, it felt like Virginia might have gotten knocked out when it lost that wild game in the tournament to NC State. And obviously, they didn't then acquit themselves well of deserving it, but NC State did, right? NC State's kept playing. So it is hard to think that a team could win 20-plus games, have a winning record in the ACC, be in the top five in the conference, and be anything but a lock for the tournament, but the way the network's right now, it is.
Yeah, it's crazy. But what about, I mean, the highlight of this is the NC State's run. I mean, going through the conference tournament, that was the way they had to do it to get in, like Virginia Tech a couple years ago, but we lost in the tournament. And now they've won two games. Like, I had them going one game, but not two. Like, it's really incredible what they've been able to do. And correct me if I'm wrong, I know Oregon, they had players injured come back, and then you could see them have a chance. And I know they're still not playing, but still you could see what we're talking about. I mean, what got right with NC State? I'm not recalling some major injured player being back now. They're just playing better basketball. They're giving it to the big guy, let him beat people up. Like, they're just playing so much better.
Yeah, I mean, they've had some stretches like this year, but then they lost, their last four of the regular season? And I mean, guys, we went to D.C., expecting Kevin Keats to get fired. Instead, he wins the tournament. That triggers a two-year extension on his contract. Then they go to the NCAA tournament, and we're expecting them to get whacked. And instead, they go to the Sweet 16, and you tack on another, making more money and tack on another. It is, I mean, by the time this thing's over, Kevin Keats is going to have a lifetime contract at NC State. But good for him. It's been interesting. They are playing their best basketball. They're playing to their identity, which is aggressive, downhill, driving the ball. And DJ Burns, if you haven't seen him, he's tough. If you've seen him, he's tough. But if you've never matched up with him and you don't understand how big and strong, how most of the officials, especially this time of year, are letting him play. Mm-hmm. I mean, they let him lower the shoulder and drive into you. And I don't know. I like DJ, but I watch it and I'm like, that's foul. That's foul. That's foul. That's foul. And, you know, it's like, what are you supposed to do with that? And then the fact that he's such a good passer and such an intelligent passer, he's got more touch around the basket. He isn't just going through you, but he can, you know, he's a great player. And if you have not played him once a season or three times in your career, there's a little shock there. And I think that's part of their run is teams are, you can watch it on film and you're like, okay, maybe we'll post-trap this guy or we better. But then you get out there and you've got a guy that you think can put your chest into him and you're watching your guy go flying into the second row. And it's like, okay, we need to throw the whole plan out. What do we do? But you know, they're fascinating and they may not be done.
Well, and as good as they have been, you know, we've obviously UNC being a one seed, you expected this. Clemson's another team that had kind of been up and down a little bit during the regular season. And as we've touched on, maybe that is because the ACC is better than we were led to believe.
Yeah.
And it's hard to go. It's hard to rattle off consistent wins in a power conference, unlike the SEC, which is soft as Charmin toilet paper. And somehow Kentucky loses to Arkansas and we're supposed to ignore that. But then they play Oakland and they lose there too. And that's because, you know, the Horizon League is a powerhouse, but, Clemson is now really clicking, and this is a team that, honestly, like, that Baylor win impressed me, because I thought for sure, I was like, that was the team that worried me from a UNC getting to the Final Four perspective of, this Baylor Bears team is legit, I think they're a Final Four team, and then to watch Clemson win that game, the way they did, kind of, I know it got close toward the end, but Clemson, it felt like, had them at arm's length the whole game.
100%, and you know, that's the site I was out at after Virginia lost, so I got to spend time with Clemson. And I'd say this, of all the ACC teams, you know, sure, Carolina and Duke were impressive, mm-hmm. just dominating people. But Clemson is the one that had to play really good basketball, right? It was not an easy path. I mean, New Mexico was favored mm-hmm. in Vegas. New Mexico mm-hmm. was favored in their first game. Clemson won that one convincingly. Then you've got Baylor, and Clemson's a big underdog again. And like you said, the score is deceiving. Clemson was in control of that game, and desperation comes in games of tournament get close at the end. So while I'm not taking away anything from Carolina and Duke, because they're, you know, rolling people is awesome. You want to do that. You know, right now, as far as who's playing the best basketball battle, Clemson's playing great basketball, had to play great basketball to get to the Sweet 16. And I think Arizona is the weakest of the twos. So like I said, I love that. I had my eye on Clemson. I'm like, if they can get to Arizona,
Clemson for months. I listened to your podcast. I've been listening to you.
I love Clemson. I mean, they got the inside out with PJ Hall and the guards outside. I mean, and I really like Brad Brunell. I think he's an underrated coach. I think this league has a few of them. It just feels like, if Brad wasn't at a football school, he might've already been fired. And that's ridiculous. Like, the guy's really good. And I mean, he's lucky that they don't pay that much attention because it's such a football school. I think Brad Brunell's a great coach and I'd love to see him get through. And like I said, great for the ACC if you get two conference teams there playing for that spot.
Well, before we get off of men's basketball, I know this isn't a team you cover all year, but I also know you were kind of paying attention and tweeting about him during the tournament as well.
He used to cover him.
Yeah. Mark Byington is gone. The surprising thing to me wasn't that he left, it was the destination. Vanderbilt was one I hadn't heard, but they offered him.
I didn't even know they had an opening.
Well, I knew they had fired Jerry Stackhouse.
That's right. I did hear that.
Yeah, when you get ejected from the Siegel
Center. That was who it was.
When you get ejected from the Siegel Center, you get follows. But yes. he gets let go. Vanderbilt brings him in. It kind of, I don't know. I know you're closer to the business as well, and you are a little more like Leland and I, and where you don't read the coach's comments before before a game, and are like, "Oh, we'll see. He's not going anywhere." But yeah. Like,
my family loves this
to
town.
Say, yeah, to the say the family
love
loves Harrisonburg
because I'll buy a big house there.
Leland and I both had the reaction like after the Wisconsin game, like, "Well, it was cool, but he's gone." Like, and sure enough, he wins the Wisconsin game, and now he's at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, not a surprise, right? Not a surprise that Kurt Cignetti left. I think to your point, Cignetti, I was more surprised by the destination. Yeah. I don't think Indiana's a good job. Vanderbilt, you can win there.
Yeah,
like it's a quirky job, but I don't hate it. Like for Mark, I don't hate it as, okay, you can go there. I think you can win at Vanderbilt. And, hey, you mentioned the SEC is overinflated. So you do a good job there. You're going to rack up some wins. People are going to think it's probably better than it is. I don't hate Vanderbilt for Mark Byington. The way I saw Cignetti at Indiana as a dead end. I mean, that one surprised me. JMU in a really tough spot, right?
Yeah.
Like, their president just is leaving. Their AD is retiring.
Yeah.
They did not do a good job of – I don't know President Alger that well, but – I got the vibe, and understand, it's a you know, major university, that athletics wasn't at the top of his priority list. Because I think anybody like us sitting here could say, at the middle of the year, hey, Mark Byington's going to be a hot property.
Yes.
And your AD is retiring. You need to light a fire under whatever committee is doing it. Excuse me. You need to make sure you get an AD in because you're going to be in a dangerous position here.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and that's sadly, you know, the JMU fan accounts are really putting that out there on like the, hey, we're losing our AD, we're losing our football coach, we're losing our basketball coach. Oh yeah, the president is stepping down. Like it's
our pets' heads are falling off.
Yeah, we're replacing everybody. Soon the Duke dog's going to enter the portal, and we're going to have to get a new mascot. Like
if you're JMU, and look, hey, VCU. It has made itself a national brand by doing this.
Yeah.
By hiring a great coach, winning a ton, he leaves and you do it again. That's a lot of pressure.
It is.
There's been a lot of people don't talk enough about the pressure VCU is under every time that happens. Now JMU is under that same pressure, but the AD who shepherded them through all of this is retiring. He's not going to make the hire and say, hey, work for me, but I'm leaving in 2 weeks. He can't do it. It's no coach is going to say, lots of coaches want to work for Jeff Bourne, but he's leaving. They don't want to work for him for 3 weeks. You're signing up for the unknown. Now with the president, you say, okay, what is the commitment of the university? Mm-hmm. Who is the AD? Like, it's still a great job. They got a beautiful arena. They have a passionate fan base. They've proven they can win. They've got some history. It is a really good mid-major job, a really good one. But if it's going head-to-head with another really good mid-major job, that's my concern. Because now you say, I love the idea of JMU, but the actual exactness of it right now, who's my boss? Who's his boss? What's the vision?
Yeah,
it's just it's a tough spot for a program that's had, honestly, and, you know, knock on wood, because I like JMU, but everything going their way. This is a tough spot now to be in.
To another team that potentially could be dealing with something like this, but let's talk about the on the court first. The Hokie women, they are out of the tournament. The Kittley injury just killed them down the stretch here. Had a real rough to the end of the regular season. You know, that affected their ACC tournament in my book. And then I think it's affected them here. They still got to host this weekend, but they do fall to a quality Baylor program in Blacksburg. And they fought in that game. They really put themselves in it, but they do fall. What about the Hokies here? I mean, more about this team as we start this conversation, and then we'll talk about Kenny. But, you know, that Kittley injury completely just derailed the optimism that we had for this program this year.
It's, to me, I hope I say this right, it's the worst story of the year.
Yeah.
The worst story of the year, because it was the best story of the year. Kittley came back, Georgia Amore, what they've built, and the fact that they had that magical season last year, and they said, hey, let's run it back.
Yeah.
Let's come back. Let's see what we can do. It was so special. I think everybody, maybe if you're a rival, you don't admit it, but I think everybody in the Commonwealth at least had an eye on that team and should have been rooting for them. And you know, it was a Final Four team with Kittley this year, too. I'm not saying again. They were going to do that again. They had the opportunity to be that. And to have that taken away in the fashion it was with the injury, it sucks. It's the worst story of the year. Maybe in women's basketball, definitely in the Commonwealth. It was really something special. I like the way everyone handled it. Kittley being there on the sideline, I could have used fewer camera shots of her, in just agony as the team's losing. But, you know, they made it still a feel-good story. They played great. They played hard.
Yeah.
It was not a bad basketball team without her. But, man, what a different storyline we're talking about. And we're talking about them still playing if Kittley's not hurt.
I think they got seeded correctly. I mean, I think that's what was kind of proven there. They were a 4 seed without Kittley. That's kind of where they're at. You know, that 16th in the nation area or something that's what they're at. So looking forward now, though, rumors swirl in about Kentucky talking to Kenny Brooks. That tears me up as much as any of this is because Kenny, you know, we used to go to JMU games to watch Kenny coach, basically, and some of the local girls that were playing there. And then, you know, have that at Tech, my alma mater, and be able to root that on. I think I'm sleeping less these last couple nights with the worry that Kenny might not be in Blacksburg.
Yeah, I mean, it's the reality of college sports right now. But, yeah, there's certainly a part of me that thinks it may still be okay because, I mean, Waynesboro, right?
He's from a Virginia Waynesboro, guy.
From Waynesboro. He played at JMU. He coached them up into becoming the program that all of a sudden people were talking about. Then he went to Tech and did it. And I think he's – you know, he's secure there at Virginia Tech. And I think there's got to be some value to that. That being said, he's been there a while. He got the program to the Final Four. If you're a competitive, maybe you're looking for the next challenge. And
he's got to rebuild now. That's the story. He's got
I'll buy that.
You write this article? Can you enter this out there in his mind that he's got to pick it back up now? Like
tomorrow's headline. The challenge is right there in Blacksburg for you, Kenny.
Yeah.
But, no, you know, and then there's so much too of what are you doing with NIL? How big a factor is that? And I think people overlook sometimes how big a factor it is in the women's game, right? In the men's game, you're talking the top couple stars. Yeah, yeah, yeah. People can buy recruits. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're not supposed to, but that's what's happening. But in the women's game, I think there's more, can you keep a player for another year? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You know, right? Like pro basketball for the women doesn't pay what it pays for the men. And if you have a competitive NIL, so I think there's so much wrapped up in this. I imagine that Whit Babcock is very committed to trying to find a way to keep Kenny Brooks. And the good side of that, if you're somebody who hopes he stays, he's printing money for Virginia Tech. They're selling out games. I mean, there is a reason to pay Kenny Brooks more, to try to keep him beyond just he's a good coach. It is in the big picture of the athletic department, he's valuable, not just because he wins, but because the program has been embraced by the community. Yeah. I don't know how things are going to shake out. I really don't. I don't have a good feel.
I do just look at it. I just don't look at Kentucky as some kind of upward move. I know it's the SEC, and the SEC as a conference is looked at as more stable. I know they're going to offer him money. I would think we can throw a couple more dollars at them, and then some of those, you know, home root stuff needs to count a little bit. But like his opportunity to win a national championship, I don't think you're increasing your odds with that. I think you're in the ACC that's going to give you, hey, we can lose a couple games, but we're going to get this many chances to prove ourselves against NC State, Duke, and North Carolina, and Louisville, whoever else is good. Like it's a great women's basketball conference that you can win a national championship out of. And you go to the SEC, and that same thing, I think it's a lateral move at best. I don't think it's an upward move. I'm not saying you should avoid being in the same conference as South Carolina. I don't think that's in Kenny's book. But, like, you can see them later. Let's take care of this ACC, where winning that conference does put you as – I mean, last year we finished – we won the ACC. We're a one seed. So, like, that's what you can get in the ACC.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You know who knows better what's a better job, Virginia Tech or Kentucky? Kenny Brooks. He knows better than I do. So at the end of the day,
I'm convincing you though. And now you need to go write an article.
I get it. I mean, because I look at a lot of the same things you said, right? Yeah. Like I get that there'll be more money. I think there'll be more NIL support. If that's a big thing going forward, but at the end of the day, I don't look at it and say, okay, you got to take that job. Right. Like I think more for Byington right. with Vanderbilt. I was like, okay, you got, but
yeah.
like,
so go to then, the SEC.
I don't think you have to take this job if you're Kenny Brooks. But again, he knows what's behind the curtain.
Yeah.
He knows what shape the program is in long term. He knows what challenges. So, and I'm not saying that means he's going to take it, but if he does, I think that tells you something, right? Mm-hmm. If he does take it, because it's not that he thought it was, you know, I mean, although Kentucky, I mean, if you think of a brand name for basketball, you're going to think of Kentucky. Now, we're talking about the men's side. So there is certainly appeal. It's not a bad job. I think you're pretty spot on when you say it's kind of close to lateral. But again, there's some behind the scenes stuff that we don't know. And it will be very interesting to see if they are able to land.
And if
we were talking Tennessee, I would shut up. And that's an SEC team. If we were talking Tennessee, I'd shut up. But I just don't think it's the same.
But I will say this. Like, okay, we think it's a lateral move. And I know this isn't going to make Leland happy. But let's say, okay, where the programs are today, yes, it's a lateral move. And kind of to your point, Mike, that if he knows maybe there's a larger commitment at Kentucky or they're about to make a larger commitment to that women's basketball program, then it's not going to be a lateral move. Because if there's anything we've known from Kenny Brooks's time, I don't know if there's a job in America he can't take and build something from that program. I mean, he was great at finding players in the margins at JMU, and now he's at Tech, and he doesn't have to find him in the margins. He can get who he wants. And now, if he goes to Kentucky, yeah, wow. Now I'm going to build this program, and I agree with Leland. If it were me, I would be scared to face LSU in South Carolina every year. But for Kenny Brooks, he's going to look at that and be like, well, when I got here, it was Duke and North Carolina and NC State. And I've already taken them out. So why can't I go take out South Carolina and LSU?
Absolutely. And I think the thing that Kentucky may have going for it is the idea, and this has been the graveyard of a number of coaches, but the idea that maybe it's a sleeping giant, right? We've heard about that from Georgia Tech football, coach after coach after coach, and it keeps sleeping, right? And they haven't been able to wake it up. But if Kenny Brooks looks at it and says, okay, I can do some nice things at Virginia Tech, but if I got Kentucky rolling, it would be what Tennessee once was or what UConn is. If that's what he sees is a ceiling, that is, it's a sleeping giant, I see some appeal there. Again, it's hard for me as an outsider to know what the difference is. Because I look at the programs and you know, I say, okay, if you can do it there, you can do it here. And like you said, if you win in the ACC, you're in a good position. You're playing enough good opponents, but you're not overwhelmed. I think it's a great fit. But again, you know, you look at Kentucky, you look at their basketball program, and if he thinks I can turn Kentucky women's basketball into what Kentucky men's basketball is, man, I get it. That would be appealing.
We touched on it through my debate there. I want to stop talking about that because you're not helping me. You're not going to help my sleep patterns for the until this is resolved. the conference expansion. I don't think we talked about it with you last time we spoke. You know, there's always rumblings. Now Clemson is looking to get out without paying any money and all that. I just, your latest thoughts on conference expansion and where we're headed. You know, I think the Pac-12 has dissolved since last time we spoke with you about this topic. So where are you at on the whole outlook?
Yeah, I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, and I think I've said this to you guys, but like, let's just pull football out of it and get back to conferences that make sense. Yes. But, you know, there's just too much money wrapped up in it right now it reminds me, I don't know if you guys are into the Marvel at all, but like there's a character in the Marvel movies, Vision, and he's got this, you know, stone in his head, and they tried to take it out, but it's too connected into all of his, that's what we've got in college sports right now. That's college football, but it's too wrapped up in everything else, in the TV deals and the money and how you pay for your travel in your facilities. And you can't just pull it out, even though to me, that's what makes the most sense. And I hate it. I think the ACC did a really smart thing by adding three schools because it gives it a little more strength and stability. That being said, why there are ACC teams on the West Coast, why there's an ACC team in Texas, it makes no sense. It makes zero sense, but it's about not becoming, it becomes less about the ceiling and what you want to be and more about the floor. You don't want to become the Pac-12
because
they're not around anymore.
Yeah.
And if you're the ACC, that was the driving force here. It was, I don't want to get Pac-12s. So I'm going to add these teams so that even if Clemson and Florida State are able to bolt, I've still got the numbers that I'm still viable and I can figure out what's next. That's not a rosy picture for the ACC, but it's survival. And that's what that was about. Now the thing I think that really has me, I don't know, disturbed really about all of it. When you think about the expansion, forget the fact that it like doesn't make sense. The teams you're adding and all of those things, we're all hung up on the grant of rights and nobody knows how this is going to turn out. And that's why I think this, you know, the last round of lawsuits been interesting because what we saw was finally a legal strategy. In terms of, and this was maybe more for the exit fee portion of it, but challenging, okay, if this is Notre Dame's value as a non-full member, then how is this the buyout for the full members? It doesn't equate. It's the first time in all of this garbage that we've actually heard a legal argument. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if that holds water, if a judge is going to be like, no, or if a judge is going to be like, that's a good loophole. But what you have is all these schools looking for the loophole to tug on to get out of this thing. This is the first one where I saw, okay, that I can hear that said out loud and it makes sense. Don't know if you win or lose with it. So it really is. It's you almost wish that we could just have some kind of supreme ruling here on the grant of rights and the exit fee, because if it's ironclad, nothing's happening for a little while. We talked about that, I think. You know, you get 6 years down the line and all of a sudden those prices are more affordable.
Tolerable.
You can do it.
Yeah.
But let's just, if that's where we're at, but if Florida State and Clemson are tugging on these strings that may be loose, now you have Virginia, Virginia Tech, Carolina, all these other schools who, it's not that they have anything against the ACC. Their first choice would be that the ACC survives and thrives. That would be their first choice if you're Virginia, if you're Virginia Tech, if you're Carolina. But you'd be ignorant to sit by and end up like Washington State, right? Like you don't want to be in a conference that's defunct. You don't want to be the team that was playing musical chairs and has nowhere to put your butt at the end of it. So what weakens the ACC is every athletic director and president in this league has to do their due diligence on what would it cost to get out? What would it look like? And that creates a narrative that everybody wants out, that the league is weak. It's not that. It's just you can't be left holding the bag. You don't want to be the last one to turn the lights out. So It's a really, really, I would not, because he gets paid a lot. I was going to say, I wouldn't trade jobs with Jim Phillips, but it is certainly not the job that Jim Phillips signed up for.
Yeah.
And it's brutal right now.
Well, and I mean,
I can do any job for a year before they fire me and then catch that check. I would do his job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also it's no secret, kind of like we were talking about with basketball, where a lot of those stories come out on, oh, you know, they're looking to leave. They're looking to bolt. Maybe they can, maybe this is a way. And you do wonder if ESPN, who that grant of rights is through, if ESPN's like, oh, try this.
It very much feels, that's what I mean about it being a bad partnership. At no point do you feel like.
Let's say if those teams bolt, are you telling me ESPN's not going to go back to the ACC and be like, well, this isn't the conference we signed up for, so.
100%.
We're 100%.
Done. And, you know,
enjoy
at best. Yeah, at best, ESPN is doing what I just said all those other schools are doing, which is being prepared. But I think at worst, they're pulling strings. And it just doesn't feel like they're pulling strings to help the ACC. I mean, it certainly does not feel that way.
Well, and that's why I'm interested. I know I haven't kept up a close enough watch on it, but I know there were people in the Pac-12, in the Pac-12 commissioner in particular, and because it's only two schools left, I don't know if there's anybody really worth pursuing it. But they had accused ESPN of the same thing, and they were talking about this. There could be legal ramifications here. And of course, I guess the difficulty there is, how do you prove it? But I don't know, man. You said it at the top, and Leland and I agree. I just wish football and everything else was different, because I hate that we're losing all these great matchups and all these great rivalries. And Leland and I talk about this too, and it gets boiled down to NIL and everything else. And now the Big Ten and the SEC are like, if we don't get our way on the college football playoff, and you can already hear the rumblings, if we don't get our way in March Madness, like, we're going to pull away and do our own thing. To which I told Leland, I was like, college basketball is the one thing the NCAA could sit there and say, okay, go ahead. No one's going to watch your BS tournament. Like, college football, okay, you're going to lose that argument. But I just...
You already don't control their postseason.
Yeah, exactly. But it's almost like they're going to kill college athletics for the very short term without realizing that, okay, this bubble's going to burst eventually. And when it does, and once this college athletic landscape, particularly in football, becomes something that we don't even recognize anymore, are people still going to love it the same way? Like, right now, yes, South Carolina is a very long shot to get into the college football playoff. But if we make 64-team mega league, South Carolina has no shot of ever going to the college football playoff. And Georgia Tech, who you're talking about, sleeping giant, long shot. But if they're probably a team that gets left out in 64-team mega land, and so then once they don't have a shot, do people even go to the games anymore? Because then that becomes the new FCS, and they don't get the same attendance. And so, to me, I'm like, man, the reason, and you listen to a college football show, and it's, oh, well, you know, they're all coming to watch Marvin Harrison Jr., and they're all coming to watch Spencer Rattler, or, you know, whoever the top player is. And I'm like, I think you're forgetting the very essence of college fandom, which is, I went to that school, or that's the local team to where I live. I know friends that went to that school. That's why I love that school. That's why we go, and we have a shot, no matter how small, we have a shot at making it. And I think they get closer and closer with each expansion of killing that. And I worry that we're gonna wake up one day, and this isn't going to be the same thing. And at that point, it might be too late to put that cat back in the bag. And I think that media deal is going to go down, because, yes, Alabama, yes, Georgia, they're mega fan bases. But if the Virginia Techs and the North Carolinas, who I know will probably get scooped up.
All these other markets.
Yeah, but if all these other conferences, or the Big 12 teams even, like West Virginia's and Cincinnati's and all that, if they're not actually going to get a seat at the table anymore, they're going to stop caring. And if they stop caring, the TV numbers go down, because then it's like, okay, well, am I going to watch college football, or am I going to watch pro football? Pro football's better. I'll watch that.
Yeah, I think the TV contract bubble is about to burst anyway. Mm-hmm. The thing that I'm so annoyed by when I look at the SEC and the Big Ten, they're very good. I get it. They're very good right now. They haven't always been very good. They've had down periods. It's almost like they're saying, hey, we're good at this moment where the money's going through the roof. So we should be anointed as the kings of everything forever. And that's not the way college athletics works, right? Alabama wasn't good for a while. That happens. Georgia wasn't good for a while. That happens.
The Big East used to produce national championship contenders. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it goes in cycles. And the idea that you're going to say the entire model of this sport should be built around the fact that my league is better, that's stupid, because 10 years from now, your league might not be better and it's not healthy, but no one cares about the long-term health of the sport. No one does. Like, everybody is either trying to prop themselves up, Big Ten, SEC, take over, or they're trying to not get left behind everybody else, right? And nobody is standing up and saying, hey, we don't know what strengths of leagues is going to look like in 10, 15 years. Let's make sure college football is still king. Not the SEC is king or the Big Ten is king, but they don't care, right? Nobody cares because there's money out to wazoo right now and they're going to chase it until it dries up and then they're going to kill this thing. And we're all going to be sitting here going, well, duh, that's what was always coming. But they'll have cashed their checks and they'll move on.
But and it goes not as much as
into Mike. These last two topics are depressing me.
Not as much as the basketball conversation, but even I've said this to Leland. Yes, Alabama was good. Yes, Georgia was good. But then it gets quiet after that in the SEC football. I think that it's similar to basketball where they play a bunch of weak non-conference teams, beat the piss out of them, and it's like, look at us. We're amazing.
Yeah. I mean, they had some teams that were, you know, Tennessee's got a lot of talent. Tennessee wasn't bad.
Through.
But right, it's not, look, there's only one Alabama, and it's not really Alabama anymore, right?
Well, they keep telling us Ole Miss is awesome. They
I was going to say Ole Miss
Mississippi
is
State's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, they're not.
Yeah, and you know, like, and then it feeds itself because those schools have that reputation, so they get more of the big time recruits. But now with the transfer portal, guys aren't staying, right? If guys go to Mississippi State or Ole Miss and find out it's not that good, they can leave.
Yeah,
right. And so that's another part that I think we were headed towards amazing parity in college football, and the Big Ten and the SEC saw that and said, we can stop it with money and with TV deals. And so instead of going to a point where we had 100 teams that look kind of similar and the games would be like the NFL, where, right, I mean, there's some terrible teams, but for the most part, you don't know who's going to win on a given Sunday in the NFL. I think college football was heading there, and I think the Big Ten and the SEC said, I don't want it to go there, so let's just sell out here with the money and the TV deals and prevent it.
But I think the other thing that a lot of these schools, particularly at Florida State, and at Clemson, who right now you've got some cachet, but what happens if you stop getting that cachet? The SEC in particular,
you
I know.
Buy into NIL.
I know the SEC is this way, and I'm pretty sure the Big Ten is similar in the sense that they don't split that money up evenly. So unlike the ACC, which Florida State is currently griping about, that everybody gets the same slice of the pie, if they go to the SEC, and the SEC is going to say, that's cool, Florida State. You were top dog in the ACC, but we have Georgia. We have Alabama. We have
Florida. Florida starts spanking
we have,
you.
Yeah, we have Florida. We have Auburn. We have Ole Miss, who rank ahead of you more times than not, so they're going to get bigger slices of the pie. At what point does that slice of the pie that Florida State is getting really worth that much more than what they would get in the ACC on an equal foot?
Yeah, and that's part of the problem with expansion in general is
there's only so much money. Yeah.
Right. And who's left out there that has value? Everybody always talks about fan bases and geography. But when you're talking about expansion, if you add a team, now you've cut the pie into another section, right? If the two of you guys were splitting a pizza and then I show up, now you're splitting it three ways. Am I worth it to share that pizza with you? I'm worth it. Yeah, I am. But I'm saying, so if you're doing expansion, you say, okay, well, we could bring in West Virginia. We can bring in Cincinnati. Okay, how much money do they bring in? And is it more or less than what your share is going
to be? It's
down
the Notre Dame or nothing right now for the ACC. That's where it is. It has to be someone that good to come in.
100%. They are the only school that has the value now. So it's almost like you're waiting for these TV contracts bubble to burst and it to go down. And then you say, okay, well, now it makes more sense. But that is the scariest thing in college athletics because everybody's overextended on contracts, on facilities, on scholarships, on NIL. They've done every projection, which I can't believe they do this, is based on current television contracts.
Yes.
If the bubble bursts, they're all going bankrupt. there isn't money to pay the bills. And that's the other part that's terrifying, is how much of their future have they mortgaged on TV contracts that nobody in the industry thinks are going to keep trending up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes
back to, we're
going
to run out of Californias and Texases to add into the media market. And that's the only way that we were saying this Notre Dame thing before we added these other teams, but we made a swoop across the country. We didn't think anybody would ever do.
Are we going to have ACC Europe? Right.
Yeah.
Like what's left? Where are you going to create value?
Yeah. But it's like Leland and I talked about with the NIL stuff. Like, one way to correct this on look at all the people making millions and hundreds of millions of dollars is, one, all the money you're getting, you invest into your athletic programs and your facilities. And two, you don't pay the college football coach to where he's the highest paid state employee. That's one way that you don't look at these poor disadvantaged players. But they didn't do it that way. And now we're here, and there's NIL, and now maybe NCAA athletes are employees, and good Lord, if that happens, that'll kill it quick.
Yeah, it's fascinating when I talk to coaches, and I won't call any of them out, but I talk to college football coaches, and I don't know if it's hubris or if it's greed or if it's honestly lack of awareness, but they'll sit with me and they'll be like, you know, it used to be that we hit our donors up for facilities money, and now it's going to have to be we hit our donors up for NIL money. And because money's got to come from somewhere. And I'm sitting there thinking, hey man, you make $3.2 million a year. You know what would cover your NIL is if you had a normal salary. And I don't know if it's that they don't want to admit it because they don't want that to happen, or if it's they're so unaware, but I think you're right. That is the chunk to me that you can slash dramatically and pay for all those other things.
Yeah.
Good times.
All right, we got to be quick about this to get out of here. Binge watching. I know you're busy with basketball and flying all over the place, but at some point, I know you've watched something. So, just what do our listeners need to know to go watch?
I should have remembered because we always talk about that. Yeah. I'm trying to think what I did just binge watch recently,
a movie. It doesn't have to be a whole series, but just something.
Well, I'm really into Killers of the Flower Moon, but I haven't seen all of it because I flew on American Airlines out to Dayton, and I watched the first half of the movie. It starts a little slow, but then I got really into it, and I was all about it. And I said, okay, it's 7.5 million hours. So I'm like, I'll watch the second half on the flight back. Yeah. But then I flew back on Delta, and Delta didn't have it. So I have not seen the second half but I will tell you, the first half I thought was really good. It pulled me in. I understand why it's so long, because they set up every shot with like 3 minutes longer than it needs to be. It's a work of art instead of just a movie. But I would say watch it, and I would say watch the second half and tell me what happens, because I'm intrigued as hell.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for coming on with us. Like always, we appreciate you coming on for, we just talked for an hour, I think. So thanks for coming on. We'll get you on again here coming up, and good luck with the spring. And I guess I'm sure you're still covering plenty of stuff, but not quite the push as you have in the winter.
I've got a big story coming out. It's a feature on Efton Reed, who's from Richmond. He's at Wake
Forest. I thought you might say Kim Mulkey. I was getting worried.
So. No, I'm not part of that mess. But he's got an amazing story of, he was homeless as a child. His little brother was murdered. I mean, he has an unbelievable life story. And I'm trying to, this spring and summer, find more stories like that you just don't have the time to sink your teeth into when you're on the beat of football and basketball. So I'll be doing some lacrosse, maybe a little baseball, but I'm going to try to find more stories like that. And so hopefully people will enjoy reading them.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure our listeners know about it when we see them come across. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So thanks again to Mike Barber coming on. He's a great guest for this podcast. We just talked about everything we wanted to talk about this week. We watched the tournament together, Joe. So like, outside of what we talked about Barber with, anything that stood out from the weekend or Sunday? We didn't talk about Sunday stuff because we weren't together. But anything sticking out that we didn't touch on already?
We watched a lot together.
I mean, you're knocking states off the map as we're watching it. So, what do we have left?
Great point. So, to recap, I no longer recognize the Mormon Church. We lost Texas, Florida, Ohio. Let's see, who else did we lose? Oregon.
I believe we lost.
We did lose Oregon, which was tough. There was another state that we lost that really changed the electoral map, that is escaping me right now. But yeah, it's been a tough go.
McNeese, did we lose McNeese State? Is that
no,
where they are?
I didn't have McNeese State. but it really boils down to the fact that, you know, when I believe in these kids and they don't believe in themselves, it makes me look bad.
I was disappointed on the weekend, a lot less upsets, which that's how the tournament does a lot of times. I was looking for one of those Cinderellas to go through, particularly JMU. I think we didn't touch on JMU as much with Mike Barber there, so let's hit that. They were a darling pick to beat Wisconsin, and I was so proud. Even early, I said it during the game, no matter what happens from here, they showed up and they played. They didn't. You know, they weren't McNeese State that everybody was picking and then just not show up. JMU showed up. They beat Wisconsin. It was a great outing. Made me a believer that they could beat Duke, even though I'd already picked that before the tournament even started. And so then I, you know, backed that up with some other business. And they didn't. And I mean, Duke had a really good outing to take them out. I mean, that was the other side of it. I mean, Duke played one of their better games they played all year at the right time. And maybe they're coming together at the right time to make a little bit of a run. I don't think they're winning a national championship, but they played a great game there, set themselves up to have success next weekend as well. And that's what it took to get JMU out of there. I think they opened a lot of people's eyes. The crowd was awesome for JMU, especially against the Wisconsin in Wisconsin game in Brooklyn. So just a lot to be proud of from the JMU side. I know they lose their coach the day after, but you know, like it was a highlight weekend for that program.
I agree. This is by far one of the biggest seasons in JMU basketball history. And it sucks that you lose your coach at the end of it. I think you and I both, though, on your couch said to each other, he gone. Like, you won the Wisconsin game.
No doubt.
Yeah. And we were questioning West Virginia, Louisville, maybe somebody, and then it turns out to be Vanderbilt.
I didn't think of Vanderbilt.
Yeah, we didn't. Vanderbilt, I forgot they were a team.
Yeah.
But it wasn't too long since they've been having tournament success too. So
yeah, they can be successful there.
Yeah. The Wisconsin game was great. They played great.
Yeah.
They got the win. That was a game that got close at times, but outside of a moment where I wanted to take a scholarship away from somebody who missed a layup, didn't really feel pressure in that game. I felt fairly confident. Now, the game on Sunday was the complete opposite, and I honestly, at a certain point, I was like, well, you know what? At least I know that I can turn this off and go do other things I need to do, because there is no shot of us winning this game. But, you know, we got
early, like in the first 10 minutes, I was like, okay, withstand the everything is going right for Duke and just be in spitting distance, but then there was no spitting distance left, and then Duke kept it going. Like, they never really let up.
We got to feed on a weaker Big Ten team in the first round, and then we played that juggernaut that is the ACC, which ESPN was telling us the whole time.
But beating Wisconsin, I mean, just the fact that, I mean, beating...
It's a big win.
Beating a program...
That's a program that has like pedigree.
It's monumental.
It is. It's a massive win. And, yeah, we don't get to Sweet 16, but that's okay. And hopefully the hire is a home run. Barber gave you all the reasons why it's going to be hard for Bourne to make that hire, and I don't discount those. I'm just saying I hope he's the one that makes the hire, because I trust him more than the unknown. He's made a lot of good hires, particularly on the football side. I think he learned his lesson on the Madison Man stuff. I don't think we're going to have to worry about that.
Well, he got it right the last time.
You know what? Maybe we hire Kenny Brooks. this podcast will have two very different feelings if JMU men did hire Kenny Brooks.
I don't think Kenny's going to the man's game. I think he's
what a challenge. What a challenge.
What he said when he wanted to coach the women, and he's been in that.
Sure.
And he's risen to the top of that field.
But he's already accomplished that. He's gotten to a Final Four there. Now it's time for a men's Final Four with JMU, his alma mater where he played.
Yeah.
That's the only Madison man I'm interested in hiring.
All right, moving over to the women's side. I know Tech went out. We talked about that. I was surprised Ohio State went out early. Duke, the power of an ACC team, Duke came back and beat Ohio State. I thought they were a strong team. I had them winning some games in the bracket, obviously, and that was a team I was kind of watching out for. So I was surprised they went out so early. I know Monday night here, Caitlin Clark and Iowa, they won in advance. West Virginia hung around them, which was impressive. For that program as an eight seed, like I didn't expect them to even be in it. But that tournament, I'm really looking forward to next weekend too, because that's when you start seeing some of these better matchups. That's why I'm not happy Ohio State's gone, because I thought they could have messed somebody up. So that's kind of one of the bigger surprises. Tech is one of, that's going to get called out as a Final Four team going down from last year. But then I think most of the other high seeds are still there. Which is normal for that tournament. I mean, the haves and the haves nots are separated further in the women's game right now.
It's better than it was. I mean,
it's getting better than it was.
You go back 5 years ago and it was very much not as parity driven as it is now. So
absolutely.
I do think that's just going to continue to improve, but the women's NCAA tournament has been very interesting. But you know, in the WBIT, where our two teams outside of Tech were, we watched both of them lose almost simultaneously, unfortunately. JMU fell to Stony Brook at home. It was the odd situation of JMU goes from not being in the WBIT to the number one overall seed in the WBIT. And they lose. VCU women were in the WBIT. They had to go to Villanova, did their best, but just couldn't get the win there.
What did the men do there?
The men did win. I'm not sure if the men beat Ohio State in their second game. If you give me a second, I will look that up.
On the other men's side, Virginia Tech in the NIT, they beat Richmond and then fell to Ohio State. A lot of common opponent schools here. And that's one of those cases for Virginia Tech. I'm glad they were at least asked to do something. Them losing in the NIT in the second round, I'm not embarrassed by that. I'm also not mad. Like it'd been nice to win it, but okay, whatever. It's not the big tournament, so you only care about so much. I'm glad they got an extra week out of it. I just hope the portal's nice to them. And there we go from there.
I said Ohio State, that's who Virginia Tech played. They played South Florida and they did win. They are into the quarterfinal and they will play at Utah on Wednesday.
Ooh, cool. I'll watch out for that.
Should be interesting. But, yeah, I mean, the tournaments have been fun. I've enjoyed it. It's baseball season.
It's time to start talking about it.
And just like Major League Baseball once, there is a massive scandal involving their most famous player.
Yeah, I don't like it. I certainly don't like it.
I will say, I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying there's an awful lot of smoke there for the amount of nothing to see here I'm getting. Like, the fact that the story hasn't been fleshed out either, like, and it seemed like when they scheduled their interview on their time, it was like they didn't quite have everything together. And then after the interview's done, they're like, oh, wait, no, that's not actually what happened. This is what happened. And I'm like, okay, that's weird.
Everybody needed everybody to be on the same page from the beginning of this.
They weren't.
Because
it's bad.
If there's a cover-up happening here, you really needed that. If there's not a cover-up here, you needed very fine lines drawn to exactly what the problem is. And so we're going to hear more and more about this. I don't think this is getting solved this week. I think this is one of those things we're going to find out way after this. What really went down. I want to play the ignorant side so badly because I just don't want a fresh Pete Rose story out there, because I know how much the old Pete Rose story annoys me every middle of summer when that's the only thing to talk about on sports radio. And that's, there's this Pete Rose day, and I don't need this for Ohtani. I'm excited of the kind of player he is. I know we went to the Dodgers, so we're supposed to hate him now, but I still want to see what he can do. And I don't want this cloud over him. And every step that they take with this just seems like it's building a bigger cloud.
Yeah, it's It is a situation where I feel, in a way, this is the best thing that could ever happen to Pete Rose. Because even even if Ohtani...
Well, that's who I'm worried about in all this, is Pete Rose's...
Even if Ohtani does get... He's involved and he's been betting on baseball, which is worst case scenario. I don't think he gets a lifetime ban. And at that point, the groundswell and the screaming is going to be so loud that I think they got to let him in.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this. I once was in your presence, and there was another one where I was talking to somebody who didn't know who Shohei Ohtani was, and talking about the story.
Surprised me, too. I don't know what to tell you.
And what I told this other person was, okay, you know who Babe Ruth is. Now, imagine him actually good at baseball. That's Shohei Ohtani. And so, like, if you're not a baseball fan, that's what I'll tell you listening to this podcast. You probably know who Babe Ruth is. Now imagine Babe Ruth is actually athletic and actually good. That's Shohei Ohtani. And he's dynamite. So this is a huge, huge story. Major League Baseball is doing their best to try to cover this up. And in fact, the first thing out of Major League Baseball's mouth was, there won't be an investigation. Nothing to see here. And then the feds started being like, wait a minute.
Well, we're gonna.
Yeah, the feds were like, when the feds heard the story, they're like, wait a minute. What do you mean he paid the $4.5 million in gambling debts that you had? Because that's not legal. And then when it was like, oh, no, he doesn't know anything about it. The feds were like, cool. We would like to do an investigation into that. Not saying that he is. The feds have been very clear. They're not saying he did anything wrong. But they're also not saying he didn't. And they're very much still in the investigation mode, which then Major League Baseball is going to do their investigation. And I was listening to a podcast today and they were talking about it. And because I'm catching up on what I missed from last week. Major League Baseball's best attempts at covering this up will be undone by the fact that there is a federal investigation involved. And you can't stop that.
So that's what I kind of caught wind of today.
It's not the Yankees letter. It's not the Yankees letter. They can't cover that up and make it go away. This is now a federal investigation.
This is what I caught wind of today, though, is that there was a bigger investigation going on with about the bookie and all that aspect of it. And, like, the whole Ohtani aspect of this, whether it's the trainer or whatever, kind of came out as like collateral damage from it all. Like, it wasn't even like that was what they were after. It's that they uncovered this and then they were like, oh, wait a minute. And like, that's how this got uncovered right now. So I don't know, man. I don't know enough about it. I hate for Major League Baseball that continues to step on themselves with everything. That to have the bad luck of something like this, where their biggest star really is going to have definitely some trouble right here. So, and he's surrounded by trouble in the very least.
Yeah.
So I hate it. I don't like it. And especially going into the first week of the season, which it is Thursday, opening day. I hate how they've done this now a couple years in a row. Now it starts on Thursday. It's like a normal game. And then it just kind of comes in like a lamb. I don't understand it.
Why
not the old Sunday night, big old game, Braves and Mets, or, you know, somebody that was in the World Series last year and somebody else that almost was, first night of the season, and then Monday, day games all day, ESPN show games all day. They don't do that anymore. Like, it's just not what it used to be, and I think this is also hurting sport. But Thursday is going to be the opening day, whether it's hyped or not, and I'm excited about that.
Well, I got a question. For a sport that clamors and brags about its attendance stuff, why would you not do it on a Friday? Your series are Friday, Saturday, Sunday typically anyway. Why not do it on a Friday? Okay. Everybody takes off of work if they want to go.
Yeah. Well, they'll put all the Thursday teams up and then they'll take a day off and
which
then they'll
is
play
so
Saturday.
Stupid.
Just spread it out. I don't know what. Infinitely just do it better. Everybody, do it better.
The whole whenever your home opener is, the next day is an off day is so, so dumb.
That reminds me of a grinds my gear thing that's going to come up here. So remember this because I'm going to get to it.
Okay. The other off the field news is the Orioles have officially been sold or will be on Wednesday when that vote takes place with the owners to finish the finalizing of the majority of this stake in the Orioles being given to the Rubenstein Group, which is great for the Orioles. It does mean that Peter Angelos passed away, the former owner of the Orioles. But now we have new owners. They have a controlling share in the stake, and that is good for the franchise. I will leave it at that.
A much different way than I thought you were going to talk about this, but yeah.
I will just leave it at that.
That's fine. I was talking to a dude a couple weeks ago that was really looking forward to the day when the Orioles be completely sold and referenced that it would be one heck of a day. He'd really celebrate. I may or may not have seen that dude on the day that that's happened. And he was celebrating, constantly singing, kind of humming to himself, kind of skipping around the room, but yeah, that's cool. Like, I respect you, Joe, here today, you know, leaving it at that. And
I would
that
never
other
do
guy that I've talked to in the past, mm-hmm. we'll leave his name out of it.
Yeah, I would never do that. But that guy sounds like he had a time, and it sounds like he's probably was a really great hang this weekend.
Yeah. No, he's a great dude and one heck of an Orioles fan, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
So looking ahead at this season, now that we have all those off-the-field things talked about, I don't necessarily think we need to run through every division winner or anything. What are some locks for you this season? And do you have any surprise teams out there?
Orioles playoffs is a lock, brother.
Division winner? Because I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just trying to think about who's going to get in our way. And when I thought about it, I thought, is it going to be someone like the Yankees? And then I remembered, that poverty franchise doesn't have any starting pitching, so probably not.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, now that we've got new owners, we're that Dave Chappelle skit where she's waving her money around saying, look out, everybody, there's poor people around. Like, that's going to be the Yankees. And like, our pitching is better than the Yankees, just straight up. Yeah. And I will be honest, Leland, I never thought I would say that. I never thought I would live to see the day where I'd be like, you know what? We did more to help ourselves in the offseason with our pitching rotation than the New York Yankees did. Congrats to us. Yes, they got Juan Soto, but I mean, Aaron Judge is already picking up the hint of an injury. I don't know, man. Giancarlo came in looking completely different. Maybe he's worried that they're testing for something now that they weren't testing for in the past. I don't know. In terms of the weights that they're lifting, I don't know. But I'm loving this. I am loving this. I think we're going to be fine. I think we do win the division. The Rays do worry me a little bit, but the Rays are also a little bit off schedule with the Wander Franco stuff, which is also another offseason story, which is less comedically funny, so we won't talk about it here. But he probably won't ever play baseball again.
I hope not.
But
yeah, that's a different topic. Yeah.
Then it's the Red Sox, who I think are struggling. And I've heard about the Toronto Blue Jays. I won't deny that the Blue Jays have a talented roster, but it's kind of like you are with Miami football. I've been hearing about the Toronto Blue Jays taking over baseball for 3 or 4 years now, and I guess I'll believe it when I see it. Like, they're going to find a way to not win. And I think the Orioles are in the best spot to win that division. If not, we're definitely a wild card team. So book the playoffs. I like your chances of getting the division if you're investing. In terms of surprises, here's the thing, Leland. I think we have a surprise team out of the AL Central. I don't know which of those teams it's going to be.
It's Cleveland. Cleveland is my pick.
I don't hate it, but here's – you want to know a sneaky team that is building something in terms of their younger players, and they just need, I think they're still a year or two away, but they might surprise people on the amount of wins they get this year, is the Kansas City Royals. I think they're going to be better this year. They've got young talent there. They do have a good farm system. Vinny Pascatino.
They signed Bobby Witt. They're going to have him.
Yeah, and Vinny Pascatino is another guy there that was a young player that really took off. Charlottesville Tom Sock from the Valley League. And they've got some other pieces there. For them, it's pitching. If the pitching could get together a little bit, they would be a lot better than they are right now, and they could maybe contend for that division. I still think they're a little bit away on pitching. I hope that's a team I look for in terms of maybe surprising in the number of wins they have. The Oakland A's will finish last. That's another lock. They will finish last in terms of wins again.
coming into this. Cleveland was kind of my sleeper. I don't think Seattle is as much of a sleeper because they were on the brink of the playoffs last year. I think they get it done this year. I think they get in there. I think they know what that takes to be in that hunt last year. They know – I think they've experienced where every game counts, where it came down to the last week of the season. So I think they're going to be able to use that moving forward. Their younger guys will even be that much better. So I do think Seattle gets it done. So that's kind of my two teams that I think will be involved in the playoffs. I think Cleveland's going to get in that I, you know, I think will surprise me or at least be different than last year. Cleveland's more of the surprise. The Orioles were my lock. I know you can look at Braves and Dodgers and call them locks, but I don't think that benefits anybody. That's picking the Yankees or something, which I don't think. I think Yankees and Red Sox both are likely to do what they did last year, not make the playoffs. Maybe the Yankees slide into a wild card. Maybe just because they added a wild card, that kind of thing. But they're not going to be in play for the division mid-September. They're going to be hoping for their wild card.
If we get another year where the Yankees and the Red Sox don't make the playoffs,
yeah,
I'm telling you, that meteor could hit Earth. It won't matter. I will be pumped.
I would look for like a shape up in the NL. Like, can the Phillies cause more chaos? They got hot last year, and you thought maybe they could do something in the playoffs, and they didn't. I mean, it was the Diamondbacks in the NL that came out of there, and they played the Rangers. I don't think the Rangers are going to be looking like a repeater by any means. I don't know. It's finding that next National League team, the way I'm talking about, you know, the way I talked about the Padres before and stuff like that. I don't know who I'm looking for. I keep getting told the Reds are supposed to be looking up this year, but I don't think they're there yet.
The Reds' problem is their ownership. And honestly, yeah, the manager. I do think the manager is a problem there.
Well, and if you're going to talk about ownership, let's talk about the Mets. So, like, they've been all over the place, and I have no faith in them either. Mets is one of those teams, if they ever put it together right, it'll work. But they had to blow it up last year, and they have a lot of – no value in their organization right now. So I don't know. I just haven't figured it out for the NL yet. Hopefully by May I have.
I think the Cardinals are a team that is going to be a bounce back team. I don't think they have the kind
of. Yeah, that was weird last year that they were as bad as they were. And the whole catcher that came over from the Cubs, mm-hmm. Contreras or whatever, that was weird. That was just a weird thing. So I agree with you.
You have the Marlins in. I think that's the team that. I think that's eight.
I don't have the Marlins, and that's last year's.
Oh, sorry.
Finish. Yeah, sorry.
Yep, I can't read. I guess another surprise that I'll say, I don't think the Diamondbacks make it back to the postseason.
Yeah. They just caught the right amount of fire, and they slipped in.
I mean, Giants are a problem for them. I think the Dodgers are absolutely a problem for them.
The Giants usually do things, though, on even years. That's what you got to watch out for. So
it's 2024.
That they might be there. It might be all the way at the end. The Dodgers better watch out for them.
Braves Orioles World Series.
Braves Orioles, man, that'd be fun. I mean, you were in the family room with a big Braves fan this weekend. So if that happens,
and a big Orioles
World Series watch and letting y'all go at it.
There was also that big Orioles fan in there too. So,
oh yeah, there was one there too. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah.
All right. So. I don't know. I didn't actually make a World Series pick. I'd love the Orioles to be in it because that would just be fun for this podcast. I'd like it too. I'm not against the Orioles. Is my Pirates going to be there? No. So I'll enjoy it. Either way, I'll be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you got?
I'm going to do my rant before I do my What's Dominating Life because it's a happier thing.
Yeah.
My rant, going back to, you talked about the scheduling for what do we talk about? And I said, I need to come back to that.
Home openers.
The whole MLB scheduling is messed up. Another thing that's messed up, and this isn't new. It's the way it's been for the last little bit. On the first weekend of the tournament, you have Thursday and Friday are all the NCAA games are spread out kind of evenly. Mm-hmm. Saturday, you have this afternoon block where you have solo game, solo game starts, and then another game starts during it. I get that for a Saturday, then you load them up in the night. I get that for Saturday night. They have that exact same schedule on Sunday, and it's been that way for some years now, and I don't get it. And I listened to a Kornheiser podcast today. Pat Forday was on there and he agrees. Like, he just doesn't understand. I don't know why you don't maybe have a single window in the afternoon, but then load up games and then come into the night. You still want to have that window. You still want to have games in there in the primetime Sunday night, but just have one and have that be one of your Duke or North Carolina, you know, or have it set up to, you know, likely be one of those teams. Fine. Like, I think that would be a good way to use that time. Load up those games in the late afternoon. I think that's good for everybody from 3, which is noon on the West Coast, from 3 to 7, just have those game after game after game starting, you know, every hour, every half hour, one starting. There's only 8 games to do in that day. So, like, you can do that. I don't understand why they do it this way. It makes less sense when I look at next weekend's schedule. Thursday and Friday are fine. You have a game at 7:39, and then the game starting after it. Thursday and Friday, fine. But then on the weekend, Saturday, 6 and 8 are the games. Makes sense. Prime time, later on a Saturday. Sunday afternoon, 2 and 4 are the games. So they obviously acknowledge in the Elite Eight that that Sunday afternoon window means more to them. So I just don't know why they don't do that the week before. So I am going to write a letter to the NCAA about two topics, that scheduling, and then also why the heck ticket pricing for Final Four venues is so crazy. It's like $700 for upper level tickets a year before it happens. Now, I'm not trying to go for another 2 years, and I'll talk about it on the podcast in the future, but it's just crazy to me to think that I would have to pay that much money when I'm an early buyer. But okay, like, it's just nuts. So that's my two complaints.
Okay.
Get off my lawn.
All right. I don't have much to say about those because I kind of agree with you about the scheduling, and I haven't ever tried to go to a Final Four, so I can't speak to that.
And I'm not saying the scheduling for Sunday for me personally didn't work out.
It did.
But it just shouldn't be that way. Like, it just shouldn't be.
I'll say this, I guess, for my D block. The United States, I joked about it at the top, but we're going to get CONCACAF Nations League now. The U.S. beat Mexico in the final 2-0.
Their fans were something special, huh?
That's anytime Mexico plays the U.S. and it was in Arlington, which made it even more of a thing. So,
was it at Cowboy Stadium?
It was. It's a rivalry. Like, it is what it is. And their fans are terrible. But it was a great win for the United States. Gio Reyna's man of the match. That's all good. And it just goes back to that World Cup where he didn't play, and I was told, you don't know. He must not be that good. You don't know. You're not there to practice.
But isn't he still coaching?
He is, and that's what I don't get. And it's. I do wonder if part of him getting the job back was U.S. Soccer looking at him saying, if Gio Reyna doesn't play, we will literally kill you on the field. Like, I don't know what happened there. I know he's playing now, and he's finally getting minutes, and that's great. I don't trust this guy with a World Cup roster. And I know we're winning the CONCACAF Nations League, but there was a stat that came out after that, too, and it said, you know, it brought up Mexico hasn't beaten the United States since 2019. So that's great, but Mexico isn't where we want to be when this World Cup comes around. We want to be better than that. I'm realistic. We're not going to win the World Cup this time around. Like,
we're not on the cusp of it.
I'm not asking the United States to win the World Cup. I'm just asking us to get deep in that tournament. Get into a quarterfinal, maybe even a semifinal.
I'm wrong.
Yeah. Make me believe. Make me sit here and say, you know what? I was wrong. We can win it. Like, but right now, I need to see the group we're in. Like, I don't know. Like, we could very easily not make it out of the group. We almost didn't make it out of the group in the last one. And we have way too much talent for that. Like, we play a system in which we look like assholes when we play. And I don't enjoy that. And I feel like it's U.S. soccer born, U.S. soccer bred. And it's this stupidity when I'm watching European soccer and I'm seeing the Americans that are getting in over there and they look great, and then they come here and it's like, well, you know, we gotta get these MLS guys in too, and I'm like, but we don't, like, that's not our problem. And it just becomes this whole thing of like, we need to prop up, U.S. soccer needs to prop up MLS and make it great. And, oh, well, we don't, you know, there's this U.S. Open competition, which is the oldest tournament in America, but and has tons of prestige, but the MLS teams don't want to play in it because it's not worth the squeeze for them money-wise. So let's not develop that kind of U.S. soccer. Let's develop MLS is going to be, you know, we're going to drive this train into the future, and it's going to compete with all the leagues in Europe. If you're an idiot, like, there's a salary cap. You know who doesn't have a salary cap? Europe. It's called the balance sheet at the end of the year. If you made enough money, you're in. If you didn't, uh-oh. And also, it comes down to some financial fair play rules, which Everton learned the hard way, and Manchester City, despite having 100 times more allegations of breaking financial fair play that are still being investigated, somehow hasn't gotten hit with a penalty yet. That's also money, which that's who you're competing against, though. You're competing against oil money. And God bless the LA Galaxy, but you don't have that money. The LA Galaxy don't have Saudi money, so, or Qatari money, or Jordan money, or whatever money is funneling into the European soccer. Like, it's you're dumb. And instead of trying to prop up this league, just let it be what it is. It's okay. It's an okay league. It can be there to supplement the players that we don't have that can't get to Europe. You can supplement the roster with the MLS players. But if for a second we think anyone in the MLS is better than any of our players that are getting any shred of playing time over in Europe, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. Leo Messi isn't an American. Suarez isn't an American. Those are the top of the MLS. Everybody else over there can take a back seat to Gio Reyna, can take a back seat to Tim Weah, can take a back seat to some of these guys playing in Europe, Sergio Dest. Like, you're never going to convince me the guy in the MLS is better than the guy playing for Barcelona. You're just never going to win that argument with me, because if Barcelona stepped on the field with the MLS All-Stars, they would murder them. So what kind of conversation are we having?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they won.
I'm glad they won, too, and I'm happy. But, again, it's like that, wow, Mexico hasn't beaten the U.S. since 2019. And I'm like, that's great, but we suck on the international scene. So that tells me that we're not getting tested in CONCACAF, and we need to not be comparing ourselves with Mexico. We need to be comparing ourselves with, you know, Belgium or the Netherlands. Or England. Yeah. Now, England might be a little out of our league right now, but we did get a draw with them, I guess. Those are the teams we need to be comparing ourselves with, not Mexico. Because while the fans in Mexico might love it, it's turning into Tech UVA. Like, sorry, we're tired of beating you. Like, you don't matter.
So that's my bad news. I'd give Mexico more credit than that. I mean, that seems mean.
That's fair. but in UVA fans' defense, they're not throwing bags filled with pee at us. So
yeah,
win some, you lose some. I guess my positive story, and I'll be quick, is I'm just trying to find that next thing to watch. And one of the things I watch, it's sports mostly, but occasionally there's a good show. But the F1 race finally had someone not named Max Verstappen win. Now,
his teammate?
No.
Ooh.
Now, it was 100% because Max Verstappen's engine or car gave him trouble, because
that's not common over there.
A brake didn't release, and so basically he was driving with an e-brake on his right tire the entire time, and eventually they had to retire the car because it caught fire. Ferrari had a great car in Australia this weekend. I did laugh out loud when the Ferrari person was like, oh, I think even if Max raced, we would have won. And I was like, okay. The guy who wins every race by 20 seconds? Okay.
Yeah. They're cheating really hard over there. Yeah. You can't ignore that.
Look, dude, I don't know what Dick Dastardly did to that car before the start, but he better keep doing it if you're going to win more races.
So Ferrari won, huh?
They did. Good for them. Carlos Sainz, who, ironically, doesn't have a seat for next year yet, because Lewis Hamilton is taking his seat at Ferrari.
That's right, yeah. See, I'm 12 months behind because I'm just starting the F1 series from a year ago. So,
all right.
It's the F1, the new F1 series, or the Drive to Survive, but it's showing the stuff from a year ago. All right. My last thing, What's Not My Name in Life, Casey Musgraves has a new album. And I know we've talked a lot about music lately, but this is actually current music that is new releasing albums now. So
Billy Joel has
I'm not
going to
rank every one of her songs, but I will say I have enjoyed the new album. Her last album, Golden Hour, is what, got me interested in Casey Musgrave. You know, she came out. I think she played the game well. She did what she had to do to get her foot in the door. I think she did what she had to do with those early record companies. And ever since she's been given some control of the sound she's putting out, she's put out some really great stuff. It's listed under country music. I just think it's good music. And not everything is perfectly country. It doesn't have to be. And so I'm not going to frame it that way. But a lot of it is just really solid, good music, good songwriting, and usually a good vibe to it. So I recommend that for people that like good music. It's Deeper Well is the new album that's out there. You can find it anywhere you listen to music now. Golden Hour, if Casey Musgraves is new to you, or go back for Golden Hour, because that's a great album too. She also has a song with Zach Bryan that is kind of the number one thing that comes up on Spotify. Maybe not now with Deeper Well being out, but before that, it's I Remember Everything. Really good song. Zach Bryan's a good country artist, so I recommend that song as well. So if you get like on a Spotify or something and bring up Casey Musgraves, you're going to hear a lot of what I just talked about. Songs from the new album, the last album, and that's on there. So definitely recommend all that. I also listened to her Christmas album, but you don't have to do that right now. Just remember that for the future. Get into this, and then you'll have that in December if you need it.
All right. Well, there you go. I mean, you were insulting Billy Joel, but his song did make it to the number 7 in the adult contemporary Billboard. So
it's fine. We have time to talk about that later. When I say we, it's going to be like the month I take off.
That's fine. Do the Double Decker podcast on here. Get lots of uniform and Billy Joel talk. But that'll do it for us on the Yak Sports podcast. So to get ready for the Double Decker uniform and Billy Joel podcast that will be coming this summer, you can subscribe on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
There's a criteria for your brother to come back on the podcast. You know what that is. It has to happen before he comes back on the podcast. That's a rule.
No deal, Howie.
Nope, it's got to happen.
I'm telling you, I am a person who releases these episodes. So you can find us on Twitter, YAC Sports Pod. Sometimes not even the full episode. You can also find us on Facebook, YAC Sports Pod.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, for always looking out for us there. I do mean that. But as I was saying, YAC Sports Pod on Twitter and Facebook. You can also search those on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. We will be talking about the Augusta County High School sports again, probably as soon as next week. We just need a little less going on in terms of March Madness and JMU coaches leaving and maybe Kenny Brooks leaving and baseball season starting in the major league season. So
we can't just expect Barber to know everything about what Stewart's Draft Soccer is doing right now. So that's not how we used our time today.
That's true. We'll get to it next week. But until then, folks, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Yak Sports Podcast. Have a great week.